Valentine's Day is a day that couples traditionally spend together, romancing each other or maybe rekindling that romance. In 1988, Linda Bowdrey spent the morning of Valentine's Day with her husband of 18 years. Later that day, she would disappear without a trace. Hi, I'm Lee and welcome to True Crime Queen. I post solved and unsolved cases from around the world every week on YouTube and on your favourite podcast platforms. Before I go on, a warning. This is true crime, it's real life with real people, and these cases can be disturbing and suitable for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised. Sources for this case are listed below if you wish to dive in further. Today's case takes place in the suburb of New Burlington in Springfield Township, Ohio. It's a nice town to live in with a lot of history. Older homes and historical buildings are featured throughout the town, some even dating back to the mid-1800s. They dot the wide tree-lined streets, and there's a wide range of parks and nature reserves, and the largest lake in the county, the 175-acre Winton Woods Lake. Nowadays, many make the one-hour commute to Cincinnati for work. But back in 1988, when this case takes place, there were less than 5,000 people living in New Burlington, most working locally. Linda was reported missing by her employer when she failed to show up at her work at AT&T on the 15th and the 16th of February 1988. She missed other appointments too that she had arranged. Linda was a manager and she often travelled as part of her job with AT&T, but she wasn't scheduled to travel during those days. And in the 17 years that she'd worked there, she'd never missed a day. And now she had missed 2 days in a row, with no warning, no notice, no phone call. Her employer knew that this was not something the responsible Linda would do, so they called the police to investigate. Linda Bowdrey was born on the 12th of July 1948. And was 39 when she went missing. She was an only child, and when Linda was young, her mother Joan married Ray McCurdy, who raised her as his own, and they lived in Michigan. As a child, she impressed her mother with her many talents, able to play clarinet, do ballet, and excel academically as well. Joan told the Cincinnati Inquirer, "I don't know where she got it from, because I can hardly play the radio." She was outgoing and happy, and when she wasn't engaged in creative activities, she enjoyed being with animals and had a real love for all creatures great and small. By the time she attended Bloomfield Hills High School, she was a bit quieter and more reserved, possibly because of the amount of studying she was doing to ensure she was an honours student, as well as playing in the school band and being a member of the Latin Club. Her love of animals led her to focus on a career involving animals as a veterinarian, and by 1966 she was a serious girl with mousy hair and horn-rimmed glasses when she was accepted into Michigan State University to study pre-veterinary science. For the first time in her life, she lived away from home at Hubbard Hall on campus, and she changed up her look to dyed blonde hair, and her green eyes now had contact lenses. She now paid more attention to her appearance and her social life, joining the Alpha Omicron Pi sorority. In her second year, she met Larry Bowdrey, and he was working as a teaching assistant in one of her classes. He was 7 years older than Linda, and she was immediately smitten. She was taken with how intelligent he was. Larry had graduated with honours in 1959 from Michigan State University with a bachelor's degree in science. The two seen each other, and over the holidays, Linda would work part-time at Michigan Bell, and it was a company that both her parents worked for. The extra cash was always handy for a university student. Linda graduated in 1970 and her and Larry continue to date. She stayed in Lansing and, instead of pursuing her lifelong dream of becoming a veterinarian, she decided on a different career path, accepting a full-time job at Michigan Bell. It meant that she could stay in the area and, of course, be closer to Larry. After dating for 7 years, the pair married in a low-key ceremony before a Justice of the Peace in Lansing on Christmas Eve 1975. Linda was 26 by then and Larry 33. The couple set up home at 2405 Mount Hope Avenue in Lansing, and neighbours described them as a down-to-earth couple who loved their home. They both enjoyed improving their home by decorating the house and especially creating and caring for the garden. Weekends would be spent planting flowers and fruit trees or driving to Sparta to visit Larry's mother, Doris. Larry drove Linda to work each day at Michigan Bell and picked her up every day with their dog along for the car ride. He never stopped and chatted with Linda's co-workers on these occasions, preferring to keep to himself, so her colleagues never really knew Larry well. At Michigan Bell, Linda was highly thought of. One of her co-workers admired Linda because she was so meticulous. Raina Woodman, who worked for Linda at Michigan Bell, said that she was very intelligent, probably about the youngest boss I ever had, and she was very attractive. Some say she was a little flirtatious too. She paid attention to how she looked, ensuring her hair was always done and sprayed into place, and her nails manicured and long. Linda was always the professional at work and really quite private. Most co-workers knew that she was married, but she never spoke about her husband, but she'd often talk about her dog. After 15 years at Michigan Bell, she was offered a job at AT&T in Cincinnati. And this was a promotion for Linda, and after some discussion with Larry and indecision about the move, they ultimately decided to sell their home and move to New Burlington. In April of 1985, they paid $55,000 for their home at 10135 Hamilton Avenue, New Burlington, in Springfield Township. They purchased the house from David and Mickey Deal, who were also their new neighbours, and the pair immediately got busy nesting and making another garden together to suit this house. David and Mickey said they were always working on the house and yard together. I thought they were the perfect couple. They were certainly the perfect neighbours. Once they moved, Linda was earning about $50,000 or $120,000 in today's money as manager and was the primary breadwinner for the household. Larry was finishing his doctorate in zoology and finalising his research on the population of Panama's rodents. Stephen Stevenson, who worked with Larry at the university, described him as rather serious about his work, quiet and a very hard worker. He also earned some money working part-time as a substitute teacher at Mount Healthy High School. And Larry received his doctorate later on in 1986 from Michigan State University, and he then worked as an assistant professor of zoology at the Hamilton campus of Miami University. The police started their investigation at Linda's home and talked to Larry. When police entered the home, they noticed that all of the windows were open, despite the cold. There was a humidifier going and a strong smell of bleach. Larry told police that on Valentine's Day, he and Linda had gone to Bob Evans, a country-style restaurant chain, for breakfast. After they finished their meal, the pair returned home. Linda had become involved in bodybuilding in the last few months, and according to the neighbours, she had lost about 30 pounds and was looking really good. So she continued with her bodybuilding and lifting weights when they returned home, going down to the basement to do that. And about 3:30 p.m., Larry left the home to run errands. He thought he was gone for about 45 minutes. When he returned home, Linda's new gold 1988 Acura Legend was still in the driveway, but Linda wasn't home. It wasn't until Linda had been reported missing by her employer that Larry called Linda's mother, Joan, on February the 17th to tell them that Linda had run away, but by then the police had already notified her. The police initially investigated the case as a missing persons case. Linda had disappeared, but had not taken any of the things that you would expect. Her car, her clothes, and makeup. And considering that she was always well-groomed and cared for her appearance, you would think that she would take her clothes and makeup, as that part of your personality and your habits don't change if you wish to disappear voluntarily. She'd left valuable antique jewellery, her dog Alex and her cat Barney, and as an animal lover that talked more to her colleagues about her dog than her husband, it doesn't seem likely that she would leave without her pets. But her wallet with credit cards and money was missing. The home didn't show any signs of struggle or disturbance, as you may expect with an intruder or robbery, and it wasn't long before the police came to the conclusion that this was not a missing person case. They suspected murder. The focus of the investigation now shifted to look at who was closest to Linda, and this is normal in any police investigation, to look at those closest to the victim and then span out from there. In this case, the one closest to Linda was her husband, Larry. Larry didn't believe Linda was missing at all. He told police that Linda had likely run off with one of her boyfriends, and she'd done so in the past. Prior to being interviewed by police, Larry obtained a lawyer, and many people assume that obtaining a lawyer is a sign of guilt. It's not. Obtaining a lawyer is the only way that you can ensure your legal rights are protected and represented. Larry knew that suspicion would fall on him as a husband, saying in his affidavit to police, "In situations like this, the jealous husband is the prime suspect. I know she's been murdered and I'm the prime suspect." The police started to construct a timeline starting with Valentine's Day 1988. According to Larry, they had breakfast at the Bob Evans restaurant and returned home. When they returned home, Linda called her boyfriend at 11 a.m. Linda had been seeing a man who was also married and a co-worker. She had told friends that she was in love with him. He had separated from his wife and was living in Fairfield in an apartment. And when his divorce came through, the two had planned to be together. When Linda called that morning, he was out and his roommate took a message. The boyfriend hadn't seen or heard from Linda since then, and he's never been named. According to Larry, Linda was in the basement lifting weights when he left to run errands, and was not in the home when he returned. The couple, though, had made plans to spend the weekend of Valentine's Day at Portland, Tennessee, visiting Linda's parents. However, according to Joan, Larry called us and told us it snowed and they wouldn't be able to make it. The Cincinnati Post records the weather on the 13th of February as sunny and cold, with a high of 20, and on Sunday, Valentine's Day, predicted it would be partly cloudy and milder, with a high of 39 and low of 23. Wonderground website records similar conditions with no snow. As Cincinnati is about an hour from the home at North Burlington, perhaps weather conditions change. But I wasn't able to find anything closer for that date in the historical records. About a week after Linda went missing, something odd happened. Her wallet with credit cards was found in a mailbox at the post office's Dalton Street annex, and it was handed in to police. The police soon found out that one of the appointments that Linda had missed was with a lawyer. She had made an appointment for either the 16th or 17th of February to see an attorney about a divorce. It appears she was very serious about the boyfriend and starting a new life with him. The boyfriend also provided police with an unsigned letter that he had received in his mailbox. It said, "How would you like a mason jar of burning gasoline come through your bedroom window some evening? It will if you continue your adulterous affair with my wife. I've suffered long enough, and I'm about to take this action that I hope will kill or maim you." Her friends confirmed the affair and that she was planning to end her 18-year marriage once her boyfriend, who lived in Fairfield, was divorced. Larry believed, though, that Linda would return. Larry had also actually written to the wife of Linda's boyfriend on the 8th of February, asking her to delay the divorce of her husband and to give him any information she could that might discourage Linda from leaving him. He gave police a computer printout of the letter. It's not known whether he sent the letter or not. He wanted time to change Linda's mind about leaving him. He told the boyfriend that they'd been together for 18 years and that he loved her very much and had forgiven her for the adultery. The letter also pleaded with the wife, "If you can give me any help, I need it desperately." Police also found on one of the discs they had confiscated that Larry had been keeping a computerized file on the boyfriend. According to the Lansing State Journal, the neighbours, David and Mickey, also became aware of some marital problems between the couple. Mickey used to cut Linda's hair, and the two would often chat about their lives, including their marriages. At the time, David and Mickey were going through marital issues, and they were seeing a counsellor. He was walking past when Linda was getting her hair cut, and he overheard Linda talking to Mickey about her marital problems. He said that he was shocked because he had no idea they had problems. They looked like they had a good relationship. Mickey was telling Linda about one of their counselling sessions, and David stopped to listen. He heard Linda tell Mickey, "If Larry doesn't get his act together, that'll be my next step." By this time, the police felt they had enough information to request a search warrant for the home. And in their affidavit, they stated that they believed Linda was murdered and her body was on the property. Larry's lawyer, Mark Hardig, called the affidavit speculative and said that Larry knew nothing about his wife's disappearance or what happened to her. Joan recalled that she went to the house once after Linda disappeared. When Larry answered the door, he said, "You've disappointed me." Then he slammed the door. He opened it again and he said, "Her boyfriend killed her." And he slammed the door again, and she never heard from her son-in-law again. On the 2nd of March, the police executed their search warrant to drain a cistern next to the home, looking for her body, but they didn't find anything there. Police Chief Paul Huffman said at the time that he believes that Linda was the victim of foul play, but he still hoped she would turn up alive. He also said there are other strange circumstances, but I don't want to talk about them yet. On the 5th of March, police conducted a 6-hour search of the property. They confiscated 28 items, including two kitchen cupboards with red stains believed to be blood, a muddy shovel or pick, depending on the source, and 84 computer discs. All of these items were submitted to the coroner's office for analysis. Weeks later, on the 21st of March, a $5,000 reward was offered by Linda's parents, Joan and Ray McCurdy. This was advertised by the Springfield Township Police Department and an ad in the Cincinnati Inquirer. They told the Cincinnati Inquirer that they believed Linda was dead. They said she would have contacted her mother, who she was very close to. But the couple felt that they needed to do something and be proactive to find their daughter, after sitting by a phone for a month for news and having sleepless nights and days of despair. And they hoped that the money that they had put up and that they were offering for information might lead to something that would help the police solve this case. The reward money, though, didn't generate any leads. One of the things that was confiscated from the search was a pick or shovel that had mud on it. The mud wasn't from the Bowdrys' home, but geologists were able to match the mud to a garden nearby on a 5-acre plot owned by David Jensen. According to the Cincinnati Inquirer, David Jensen was out of town on the weekend that Linda Bowdry disappeared. Mr. Jensen was not pleased with the search warrant, calling it a media circus, and it ruined his garden. He'd done a lot of planting, growing his vegetables, and he'd ploughed the dirt 6 weeks previously, and he said it was undisturbed at that time. He was very unhappy about the police presence and digging up his garden. His neighbour, Jim Wessner, who also used the plot to garden, said that the police were grandstanding for the press and they don't have anything on this case. On the 20th of April 1988, workers started at 8:30 a.m. They brought in a backhoe, metal detector and worked through the night digging in the garden. They would take out a 4 feet layer of dirt, inspect it, put it down and run over it with a metal detector, looking for Linda's body. Work was stopped that day at 7 p.m. only because the backhoe got stuck, and later the next day they would resume work. Metal detectors were used to try and find jewellery or dental fillings, anything that could be detected of Linda's body, but nothing was found. Only old items like horseshoes, which the police originally thought would bring them luck with this investigation, pens and an old doorknob. Although Larry was a gardener, he didn't make use of the large plot owned by David Jensen, and he gardened in his own home. After the excavation work on the home, Larry changed his number to an unlisted number. He had experienced a lot of community backlash with people driving past and harassing him. If Larry was outside, they would throw stones at him. In early April, the police had offers of help from three psychics, one of which was hired by the family. Joan, Linda's mother, said, "All I can do is pray to God that it does work. I just want to know where Linda is and what happened to her." They received advice from a psychic directing them to an area near Springdale and Park Roads in Winton Woods, and the psychic felt that Linda's body was buried there. To give some substance to this theory, a park ranger on a horse patrol had also found a freshly dug grave-like spot the size of a body in that area. Huffman said all leads had dried up and they were taking leads from psychics because we're at the point where we're willing to try anything. They took soil samples to have analysed to see if a body could be buried there, but after digging a few feet, they hit clay and abandoned the dig. The reward offered by the McCurdys unfortunately didn't generate any leads. The police received some prank calls, but that was it. On the 22nd of April, things seemed a little bit hopeful when a beautician reported that she had cut Mrs. Bowdrey's hair just 2 weeks ago. The woman, who stated her name was Linda Bowdrey and her address as the same street Linda lived in, came in for a cut and manicure, something that Linda would do. But investigators were not able to substantiate the report and later stated that it was definitely a false sighting. A year went by and there were no leads, and it appears that there was nothing from the lab analysis that could lead the police anywhere either. Joan decided that she would sue Larry in the US District Court for emotional distress as well as for the furniture. They had asked Larry numerous times by letter, according to their attorney Billy Warren, to return items Linda had borrowed, but he hadn't answered any of the letters. In June 1989, Joan sued her son-in-law to recover more than $10,000 worth of furniture and keepsakes she had loaned her daughter. She said that Larry was the last person to see Linda alive and didn't report her missing for several days, and later told her she had run off. She said that she had suffered emotional distress caused by him not cooperating in the search of her daughter. Lawyer Billy Warren said that Joe McCurdy had made every effort imaginable to possibly locate her daughter, and her son-in-law doesn't cooperate. And as a consequence, she suffered irreparable loss, the loss of a child. The application was filed in federal court because they live in different states. And Jones said that Larry intentionally inflicted severe emotional distress when he failed to report Linda missing. They asked for general damages, and it's unclear what the result of the court case was, and I suspect it was abandoned or settled out of court. In December of that year, Joan told the Cincinnati Inquiry in an article on missing people, "You never stop thinking about it or wondering what happened. It's something you learn to live with. You have to learn to live with it, or you can go crazy. But if you think you can forget it for a day or two, you're wrong." Unsolved Mysteries had contacted Linda's parents to do a show on Linda, but this was postponed because Larry would not take part and be interviewed. On the 14th of February 1991, the McCurdys increased the reward to $10,000. Joan said, "I'd triple it or quadruple it if I could, because I don't believe she can be at peace or I can be at peace until she's found. I will never give up hope that her murder will be solved, not ever." The McCurdys were hoping the increase in reward may make someone decide it's worth going out and looking for my daughter. She said that, "Some days I wonder how we can go on like this, but with your faith, your family and your friends around you, you'd be surprised what one person can do." Police are still baffled. From 1990 to 91, they had reports of at least half a dozen sets of skeletal remains turning up in various parts of the Midwest. They checked and none matched Linda. They said, "We get leads, but nothing pans out, but we'll keep at it." On the 7th of October 2002, 14 years after Linda disappeared, the police were still working the case. Detectives spent 2 days searching the garden of the home that Linda had lived in and Larry still lives in. They dug a 3-foot hole near the foundations of a detached garage as part of their search. They didn't disclose what prompted the search or if anything was recovered that would assist in the search for Linda. But as that was almost 20 years ago, they would have disclosed it by now, one would think, if they had found anything. I believe in Ohio, in the circumstances of Linda's disappearance, that after 5 years she would have been presumed dead by law. But if you are from that state, please let me know if that's incorrect. In 2020, the Cincinnati Inquirer featured an article on missing persons, with Linda being one of those featured. Joan told the Inquirer how impressed she was at how the police continue to work the case. So there are a number of theories with where Linda could be. The first, of course, is that she started a new life. It's popular when someone goes missing to say that they ran away, and maybe that's what happened here. Linda was planning to divorce Larry and start a new life with a new man. The problem with that theory is the planning aspect. Linda was meticulous. It doesn't seem likely that an intelligent woman would leave when she'd made plans to see her parents, made an appointment to see a lawyer, without taking her car, belongings, and the pets that she loved. She'd be giving up a very well-paid job. She wouldn't be able to make a living without her qualifications and those years of experience on a resume. She wouldn't have her bank account and her social security number. And to earn an income, she'd need to rely on the cash economy. And it seems doubtful that she could have maintained the lifestyle with a cash economy for any length of time. If she did go to lead a new life, how did she get there? How did she survive undetected for so long? It's a possibility, but it just doesn't seem that probable. She had a close relationship with her parents and she hasn't contacted them. Friends? No contact. She hasn't used her bank account since she was last seen. and if she was going to start a new life with her boyfriend, it seems that she left without one important thing, the boyfriend. He hasn't left the area. Also, if she ran off, why would she make an appointment with a lawyer to file divorce proceedings? As this is something that takes a number of visits rather than a one and done. And why would she leave before the division of assets, which would favour her as being the breadwinner for a good part of their marriage? From a financial aspect, it just doesn't make sense. And if she had plans to marry the boyfriend who was divorcing, she wouldn't be able to marry him until hers was finalised, without risking discovery or bigamy charges. The second theory was put forward by Larry, that the boyfriend killed her or had something to do with her disappearance. This seems very unlikely. The boyfriend was never named as a person of interest. There doesn't seem to be any motive based on the information available. They both planned to divorce their partners and be together. And the police investigated him and dismissed him pretty quickly in the investigation. And it seems they wouldn't do that unless he had a solid alibi. The third theory is that there was a random stranger. Perhaps there's an unknown player in this mix and Linda was abducted by a random stranger. It seems highly unlikely that this theory has any legs, as the house didn't have any signs of a struggle, unless she'd left the house and was taken elsewhere. But there's nothing to point to a random attack, so it can't be ruled in, and it can't really be ruled out. The final theory is the age-old go-to, the husband. The police have focused on Larry as being a perpetrator right from the beginning of this case. And it could be that their focus is biased and has provided a narrow investigation where they hope to find evidence to support their theory rather than follow the evidence. The problem with this case is that the evidence is light on. There are a number of things that raise suspicion, but nothing that directly implicates Larry with involvement in Linda's disappearance. Statistically, people close to us tend to be more likely to be involved in crimes against us. But that's not set in stone. Statistically, one of the most dangerous times in a relationship is when you tell the other person that you are leaving them. But statistics aren't infallible. There's nothing 100% here that directly implicates Larry in Linda's disappearance. There are several curious things, though, about Larry. He wanted to keep the relationship with Linda, as evidenced by the letter on his computer to the boyfriend's wife wanting dirt to turn Linda against the boyfriend. But yet he didn't report Linda missing. He didn't call Linda's parents to see if she'd ran off there. He didn't take part in anything to find Linda, like the search, putting up money for the reward, appearing in public appeals or the Unsolved Mysteries TV show, or even just working with Linda's parents cooperatively. It seems from the time Linda disappeared, he'd washed his hands of her, the woman that he was desperate to keep just a week before. He has implicated Linda's boyfriend in the murder, which could be drawing attention away from himself to another potential suspect. He seemed to accept that Linda was murdered very quickly in the investigation, rather than hope that she was a missing person or had even started a new life. He has qualifications in science and zoology, and that could give some interesting ideas. He was the one that called Linda's parents to advise the trip was postponed due to bad weather, rather than Linda. But on the other hand, all of these things could be explained. He might not have wanted to go to Linda's parents, he might have just wanted to make up an excuse. He might find it easier to believe that Linda is dead rather than that she didn't want to be with him. There's nothing there so far that has been released to the public that directly links him to the murder of Linda, other than a motive. He was upset. And he was jealous, and maybe he was angry that Linda was planning to divorce him and be with another man. Maybe Linda told him that day that she was seeing an attorney. It's just speculation. We don't know that. But people have been killed for less. Larry is now in his 80s and he's retired from his job. He hasn't spoken about Linda to the media since the early days of her disappearance. His mother, Doris Bowdrey, refused to talk about Linda at the time, other than to say, "I have only great love for Linda, and I always did have. It's just too close to me." It's been 34 years since the death or disappearance of Linda Bowdrey. Someone out there must know something. It may seem small or insignificant, but it may just be the missing piece of the puzzle that the police need to solve this case. For years, Joan would acknowledge the date her daughter disappeared on Valentine's Day by arranging for a florist to deliver roses to Linda's home on the 14th of each month. As soon as Linda disappeared, she knew in her heart that she would not be coming back. She said, "I know that Linda is dead. There is nothing she could have done, nowhere in this world she would go, that would make her not call me. I believe one of these days she'll be found and justice will be done." Joan is now 94 and still living in Portland. In 2020, she was interviewed by Cincinnati Inquirer and she said, "She's always on my mind. I pray for her soul every night. I pray she's in heaven and she plays all the instruments." And it's Joan's hope that she'll see resolution of this case before she dies. At the time of this recording, Linda's body has not been located, but the case remains open. If you know anything, you can call the Springfield Township Police Department at 513-729-1300. If you found this case interesting, please consider taking a moment to leave a 5-star review. It really helps me out. And if you'd like to hear more true crime cases from me, consider subscribing to the podcast. Until next time, be kind to each other and stay safe out there.